It's late on the night of June 16th, 2006, in Lakewood, California. Lakewood is a city in southeast Los Angeles. Despite being bordered by some rougher neighborhoods in LA, Lakewood is pretty safe, having a below-average violent crime rate for Los Angeles. At 1:30 a.m. that night, 18-year-old Megan Buford arrives at her home in Lakewood after a long day at work. Megan lives with several of her female family members and enters the home quietly as she knows most of them are asleep by now. At the time, Megan lived with her 37-year-old mother, Yolanda, her aunt and Yolanda's sister, 30-year-old Samantha, and her grandmother, 57-year-old Jeannie. Three generations of women under one roof. Megan gets to the room she shared with her mother, Yolanda, who is sleeping, and she starts to get ready for bed. At around 3:20 a.m., Megan is sitting in her bed, not quite ready to go to sleep yet, when she notices something by the doorway of her bedroom. Or rather, she notices someone. A woman is standing eerily still in her doorway, just looking at Megan. It takes Megan a second, but then she realizes that this woman is holding a 12-inch butcher knife above her head. This woman is Virginia Krall. Hi, strangers. This is your host, Alexa Morrissey, and today I have a story for you that hasn't really been covered much. It's a very strange tale that will have you looking a little more closely at your neighbors. Because, in reality, do we really know the people next door? Lock your doors and listen closely. This is Stranger in the House. Virginia Ann Krall was born in Los Angeles in 1984, but grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area. For most of her childhood, Virginia was taken care of by her father, William Krall. Not much is known about her mother, but it was clear that her father was the constant parent in Virginia's life. William Krall was a religious man who took his daughter to church every Sunday and often read the Bible to her. According to Virginia, she grew up with lots of love and affection. She was always told that she was loved and never suffered any abuse. Despite this, Virginia had some mental health issues that would cause her difficulties in her life. As a young adult, she was diagnosed with depression and was put on medication. In high school, Virginia was said to be the most popular girl in school, and the one thing that everyone remembers about her was how beautiful she was. People described her as jaw-dropping, eye-catching, and strikingly beautiful. Virginia went through the public school system, graduated high school, and then went to both El Camino College and Long Beach Community College for a short amount of time before dropping out. A former classmate alleges that Virginia was abusing drugs while she was in school, specifically crystal meth. By 2006, when Virginia was 22 years old, she and her father had been living together in Long Beach, California, which is a coastal beach area in Southern California. According to the Los Angeles Times, while they were living in Long Beach, her father said that Virginia suffered from, quote, problems, but refused to elaborate on what those problems were. Perhaps he could have been referring to her mental health issues or her alleged drug use. But he has never given any further information about Virginia's well-being during this time. What we do know is that around the spring of 2006, Virginia and her father were constantly fighting, and she decided to move out. That's when Virginia moved in with her then-boyfriend, Justin Schmalz. Justin lived with his mother, Kelly, in the adjacent neighborhood of Lakewood. There were no reported incidents that happened while Virginia was living with the Schmalz, but according to her, she was starting to get these strange ideas in her head. According to one interview that Virginia did with the Unforbidden Truth podcast in 2021, around the time that she had moved in with her boyfriend, she was getting, quote, random notions that something was seriously wrong. She said that she became extremely paranoid that someone was plotting against her. Then, in June of 2006, Virginia Krall said that she was starting to hear voices in her head, and that she believed it was God talking directly to her. On the night of June 16th, 2006, Justin Schmalz, Virginia's boyfriend, came home from work at 9:30 p.m. According to court documents, Justin says that he and Virginia had a normal night and that he went to sleep at 11:30 p.m. While Justin didn't notice anything odd about Virginia that night, he didn't know that she had consumed crystal meth that evening and was extremely sleep-deprived. According to court documents, Virginia believed that she was having serious religious delusions. A forensic psychologist said that Virginia believed that there were devils in this world and that they were standing in the way of her going to heaven and of other people being saved. She believed that she was selected by God to attack and kill these devils. She was to be a leader. And for some reason, Virginia believed that she would find these devils in her neighbor's home. A little before 3 a.m. on June 16th, Virginia Krall leaves her boyfriend's house and walks down the block. When she arrives at a house three homes down from where she was currently living, Virginia opens a side window and enters. This is the house of the Meraz women, a family that consisted of a grandmother in her 50s, two of her daughters, and one granddaughter, none of whom had ever interacted with Virginia Krall. According to the Los Angeles Times, when Virginia enters the house, she wanders around for almost 20 minutes while most of the family sleeps, completely unaware that there is a stranger in their house. At this time, 30-year-old Samantha Meraz is sleeping on the couch in the living room. It's unclear if Virginia saw Samantha there, but we do know that after about 20 minutes of stalling, Virginia makes her way to the nearby kitchen and grabs a 12-inch knife. With the knife in her hand, she travels to the first bedroom. Virginia stands in the bedroom doorway and looks in on 37-year-old Yolanda Meraz, who is sleeping, and her 18-year-old daughter Megan, who is still awake sitting on the bed. According to court documents, when Virginia looks at the women, they appear demonic and inhuman to her. Megan looks up and notices Virginia standing there in the doorway with the knife raised above her head. And that's when Virginia attacks. Virginia stabs the 18-year-old two times before the sleeping mother wakes up to this horrible scene. Noticing that the mother is awake, Virginia turns her attention to Yolanda. Virginia struggles with Yolanda and stabs her with the knife a few times before they roll off the bed. At this point, Megan is able to escape the room and starts yelling for her aunt and her grandmother to call 911 and get out of the house. While Megan screams for her family, Virginia stabs 37-year-old Yolanda over and over and over again. In the end, Yolanda is stabbed 30 times in the chest. Outside the room, Megan and 30-year-old Samantha run outside the house. Yolanda and Samantha's 57-year-old mother, Jeannie, has also woken up, and she is dialing 911 at her granddaughter's frantic requests, but she doesn't understand what's going on and doesn't know what to tell the operator. At this point, Virginia emerges from Yolanda's room, the knife still in her hand, and sees Jeannie. She stabs the grandmother 16 times in various areas, the top of her head, on her ear, cheek, jaw, hand, wrist, and chest. After Jeannie falls to the ground, Virginia stabs her multiple times in the back. Samantha, who was outside, runs back into the house when she hears her mother screaming. When Samantha gets inside, she sees Virginia stabbing her mother on the ground. Virginia suddenly stops and turns her attention to Samantha. With Virginia running after her, Samantha sprints out of the house towards her neighbor's lawn. Virginia grabs Samantha by the back of her shirt and pulls her to the ground. She stabs Samantha in the chest and in the arm. The screams of Samantha and her family have woken up the neighbors at this point. And one even saw Virginia straddling Samantha on the neighbor's lawn, which prompted them to call the police. Virginia, still on top of Samantha, suddenly stops her attack and gets up to walk away. But then she hears Samantha struggle to also get back up. And that's when Virginia turns around and tries to stab Samantha in the head. Virginia misses by mere inches, and luckily, Samantha is able to get a hold of the knife. Three doors down, Virginia's boyfriend's mother, Kelly, has come out of her house and sees what Virginia has done. She screams, waking up several more neighbors, and it's at this time that Virginia seems to come to her senses. She starts to scream, oh my God, what have I done? Kill me now, kill me now. Kelly grabs her son's girlfriend and tells her to shut up. She tries to calm Virginia down while she sits her down on a bench outside her house and calls 911. Within minutes, police and ambulances arrive at the bloody scene. Homicide detective Lieutenant Larry Lincoln said, quote, "There is a tremendous amount of blood inside the house, and blood was reportedly smeared on the front door." All of the Meraz women are rushed to the hospital. 57-year-old Jeannie suffered 16 stab wounds, and she had permanent nerve damage to two of her fingers on her left hand. Apparently during her attack, a piece of her tongue was actually sliced off, and she had to have it reattached. Her daughter, 30-year-old Samantha, also had 16 stab wounds, which resulted in nerve damage in one of her arms. 16-year-old Megan only suffered two stab wounds, but one resulted in a collapsed lung. Megan was in the hospital for 10 days after the attack, and that's where she found out the devastating news that her mother, 37-year-old Yolanda, didn't make it. Yolanda had been stabbed 30 times by Virginia Kroll, and according to the autopsy report, it was her injuries to her chest that were fatal. While the victims were taken to the hospital, Virginia Kroll sat on a bench outside her boyfriend's house and waited for the police to arrest her. When they arrived, police drew their guns and told Virginia to get on the floor, which she did. While she was allegedly distraught when the police first arrived, according to the Los Angeles Times, Virginia was described as very calm and answered all of the police's questions while she was being booked and processed, seemingly unaffected by the horrors she just committed. In August of 2009, Virginia Kroll pled not guilty by reason of insanity to one count of second-degree murder, three counts of attempted murder, and one count of first-degree residential burglary with a non-accomplice present. The defense said that the attack was due to Virginia's mental illness and drug use. Now, up until this point, Virginia had been using drugs, but she had no history of psychotic breaks, nor was she diagnosed with anything other than mild depression when she was younger. The prosecution presented this, and the fact that her boyfriend testified that she was acting completely normal before he went to sleep that night, to prove that Virginia was sane during the attack. The defense brought in Dr. Marshall Cherkis, a psychiatrist, who testified that there was more than a 50% chance that Virginia was grossly psychotic at the time of the attack, and that her thinking was delusional, fragmented, and without control. According to court documents, he believed that the psychosis was a product of long-term mental illness exacerbated by substance abuse. Dr. Cherkis acknowledged that the drug use could have been part of the reason, or even the primary reason, for what he believed was a psychotic episode. Now, before we go any further, we should look at how the state of California handles insanity pleas, because each state is different. California follows the McNaughton rule, or more commonly known as the right and wrong rule. This rule says that a defendant may not be found guilty by reason of insanity if, at the time of committing the act, he was laboring under such a defect of reason from disease of the mind as to not know the nature and quality of the act he was doing, or if he did know it, he did not know what he was doing was wrong. So, with that in mind, it was up to the jury to decide if Virginia Crawl knew what she was doing was wrong, despite suffering from a psychotic break. Dr. Cherkis, who had confirmed that he did believe Virginia had in fact suffered from delusional thinking at the time of the attack, did not believe that Virginia didn't understand what she was doing was wrong. According to court documents, Cherkis said that Virginia believed that there were devils in the world standing in her way of going to heaven and of other people being saved. She believed that she was selected by God to attack and kill these devils. Cherkis said, her understanding that devils represented something bad and that heaven represented something good was an indication that the defendant knew the difference between right and wrong. So according to this quote, Cherkis believed that Virginia understood the concept of right and wrong during the attack. He also said that Virginia told him that she specifically went to the Mraz home to kill. She told him that, quote, she entered the house through a window with that intent, picked up a knife with that intent, and then had the intent each time she stabbed Yolanda, Jeannie, Samantha, and Megan. Dr. Cherkis said that according to this, Virginia understood what it meant to kill. With all this information, the jury determined that Virginia was guilty of all charges, but they were deadlocked on whether or not she was sane. So the judge declared a mistrial. In 2010, Virginia Crawl had a retrial with a new jury. With the same information that was presented in the first trial, this jury found that Virginia was in fact sane during the time of the attack. Now remember, in order to be insane, you need to be unaware of what right and wrong is, and that what you're doing at the moment is wrong. The forensic psychiatrist in the first trial said that Virginia did understand the concept of right and wrong, and even though she was committing the act because she believed God was telling her to, she was aware that the act of killing was wrong. As explained by a California law group, the defense would have worked if Virginia didn't understand what she was doing was wrong. And they gave the following example. Say a schizophrenic man believes that God has entrusted him with the task of taking care of troubled children. After watching an 8-year-old boy fight with his mom in the grocery store, the man grabs the boy and shoves him in his car and takes him out for ice cream, thinking that he is helping the boy and fulfilling his God-given mission. When the man is later charged with kidnapping, he pleads not guilty by reason of insanity, because he did not understand that what he was doing was morally wrong. Long story short, the man did not understand that he was committing the act of kidnapping, whereas Virginia understood that she was committing the act of murder. Because Virginia was found sane and competent to stand trial for her original charges, in 2011, Virginia was once again in court. Now the question wasn't, was Virginia guilty? There was no doubt in anyone's mind that she was. But it had more to do with the severity of her sentencing. In addition to most likely suffering a psychotic break the night of the murder, Virginia had no previous criminal record, and the defense wanted that to be taken into account. But before her sentencing, Megan Buford, now 23 years old, read a victim impact statement before the court. Megan was not only a victim of Virginia's attack, but she had lost her mother because of the incident, and she believed that Virginia should get the maximum sentence. During her statement, she said the following, "The fact that Ms. Crawl led a quote normal life up until June 16th, 2006, holding jobs, going to school, having relationships, no trouble from the law, for 22 years, leads me to believe that she was sane and knew right from wrong. Her intent was to kill. You don't accidentally stab someone 30 times after hiding in the house for 20 minutes before attacking them in their own bed. And you don't accidentally find yourself, knife in hand, trying to slit someone's throat. She knew what she was doing. Virginia Crawl murdered my mother, and in doing so, she murdered a part of me, Megan told the judge. If it was up to her, I would not be here today, she added. She only stopped stabbing me because my mom woke up. On January 13th of 2011, Virginia Kroll was sentenced to 36 years to life, with possibility of parole after 33 years served. In 2012, Virginia appealed her case. Her attorney and her family contended that she was improperly declared sane and was in fact mentally ill. Megan Buford once again showed up in court and begged the judge not to release Virginia. The three-justice panel from California's 2nd District Court of Appeals rejected the appeal and upheld Virginia's conviction. Virginia Kroll remains in prison today, and she won't be able to apply for parole until she's about 63 years old. Virginia's father, William, still believes his daughter is a, quote, good person who did a bad deed. But a bad deed may be an understatement. Because not only was a life taken, the women of the Meraz family still suffer from PTSD from that night. Jeannie, the grandmother, was said to have never emotionally recovered from the attack in which her daughter was killed. And her daughter Samantha lives with a brutal scar on her neck that people still constantly ask her about. Megan, the youngest victim, says she still suffers from nightmares about someone trying to break into her house and kill her and her mother. Unfortunately for Megan, they aren't just nightmares. They are horrible memories of a person trying to do just that. Stay safe, strangers, and thanks for listening. This episode was written by Alexa Morrissey, researched by Victoria Cox, and produced by Michael Morrissey, John Scassia, and Heidi Sherman. Stranger in the House is a Boy Wonder production. You can follow us at strangerinthehouse.com, @_strangerinthehouse on Instagram and TikTok, and @_strangerpod on Twitter.